Hi there. I'm Dan Richards. I'm the producer of Mark and Carrie. If you like this show, check out the Watson Institute's other podcast, Trending Globally. Each week on that show, we talk with leading experts about some of the biggest issues in politics and public policy today. You can listen by subscribing to Trending Globally, wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, that's Trending Globally. All right, on with the show. Thanks.
Well, hello there, Mark. How are you?
I'm still stuck in my basement, as you can see.
I feel like we've never moved.
I've been avoiding the floods. It's been pissing down here for 3 weeks, which I suppose is better than everything being on fire, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Hard to know. Yeah, are you building your ark?
No, I'm not. I'm building just a bonfire just to be done with it. So what have you been up to?
I mean, we're in the dog days here in the summer where it's 1,000 degrees and everything just feels like it's like sticky all the time, right? I mean, the humidity and everything. We're going to talk about this, but I love the Olympics. So I've been watching a lot of Olympics and imagining myself in a nice, cool Pacific Ocean.
Which is warming all the time, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So where do you want to start? Let's start with the virus. What's been going on with the virus?
Well, I mean, of course, it's the Delta variant, right, everywhere. And so what's interesting to me, so I'll start with the politics of this. Let me be organized about this, is that where you see big spikes with the Delta, of course, is in, not of course, but is in red states. So when
it's in the Mississippi Delta.
Yeah. When we do that,
there's a signal in that.
Yes. When you look at the political maps, it's the Trump states versus the Biden states, the red states versus the blue states. So 35% vaccination rates in Arkansas, even lower in Mississippi and Alabama. So you see the map of the U.S. and the real hotspots are in those areas. And the stories that you hear on the news and elsewhere, they're just heartbreaking of people who don't believe in those, if the virus can save them or help them, or they want to take it and it's too late. And just how this is ravaging those who have not taken it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as simple as red is blue. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the historic mistrust of government institutions by minorities, particularly African Americans, etc. But at the same time, you know, we can make too much of this. I mean, we've had a media, which is one part of which has basically said, this is all fake, right? This is all part of the giant con that you're living under. And interestingly, I heard a story that last week, either Biden himself or someone very close to Biden had a one-to-one with Rupert Murdoch,
mm-hmm.
and basically had a phone call. And you hear about this?
No, I didn't.
No, they had a one-to-one where basically they said, look, it's your people who are dying, so what do you want to do about it? And oddly enough, that very evening, all of the anchors on that news network suddenly changed their tune.
Well, now,
that doesn't tell you that this is a propaganda outlet, I don't know what is, because basically that guy has control of what counts as news. But very interesting that they all changed their tune reportedly after this phone call.
Well, and I did hear about Tucker Carlson. I mean, this might have been before this, about how, you know, he's literally killing people for his ratings. And I think it was Tucker and one of the other anchors, this might be the pre-phone call, are vaccinated. You know they are, or they've given enough indication that they are, but won't admit it on
air. Yeah, but
they
refuse to say if they are or not. Yeah. Absolutely.
But I did wonder what that change in tone was, because I did sort of see the headline that Fox was now starting to say a few more.
Yeah, so apparently there was a phone call behind it.
Yeah.
So I'll jump to the UK for a minute. So in a great example of Boris snatching defeat from the jaws of victory and then claiming victory again, probably prematurely. Have you heard of the pingdemic?
I have not.
So the pingdemic is brilliant. So basically, you know, they've made this line in the sand. We're going to have Freedom Day, which is going to be July the 19th. So once you've said Freedom Day, you can't back off of Freedom Day. It doesn't matter. Like, literally, the world can be on fire and you'll be like, well, it's Freedom Day, so what can you do? So they decided one of the ways that they would deal with this is by having a proper contact tracing app. Now, you could have went out to like Singapore or Vietnam or these people that have already got it before, but then there's data privacy and security and all that sort of stuff. You need to build your own. So they finally build their own and it works, but it works too well. So if you're in a high density area like London, mm-hmm. and somebody in an apartment above you has a COVID test and it's positive, and you've got your app on and your app is a GPS locator, you end up pinging the whole building. So what was happening was in highly populated parts of Britain, which is almost everywhere, hundreds of people were being pinged as you need to isolate. So basically large parts of the labor market were collapsing. And what happened was, young people basically just started deleting the app because it was just too crazy, right? But then the government tried to enroll themselves into a pilot scheme where they wouldn't have to quarantine, because basically the app worked so well that I think it was the health secretary got COVID, and consequently the entire government was told to go into quarantine. So, I mean, it was a complete farce, right? So anyway, they've been working through this. Now, interestingly, the British numbers have been going down, right? This is too early to account for what's happened after, you know, Freedom Day. So we'll see if it goes up after that. But it is this kind of, you know, classic sort of like, you know, shambles, as we can put, omni-shambles is a good way to think about what they're doing. They have opened up the airline routes again to Americans.
Even if
Americans haven't opened up to the Brits.
Yes.
So there's a, you know, we're suppose the Brits are playing nice with that one, trying to save British Airways. But it's a usual mess. In terms of vaccines, interesting, the French are being typically French and moving towards mandates. You will do this or you don't have a job anymore. And the Germans are bending themselves seven ways to Sunday to basically say, well, mandates maybe, but at the same time, it's personal liberty, but your choices are not the only important thing. So it's becoming a bit of a political shitstorm there as well. So we'll continue to see how it plays out.
Well, and the three different thoughts, I'm trying to keep them all in my head at once. The business part of the airlines opening up, the U.S. not taking those from, I think from the UK and even continental Europe still, is the political, right? So if the Delta variant continues to spread and Republicans are then pointing to the Biden administration saying, oh, he let in all these people that were coming with the Delta, even though it's here. I mean, right? I mean,
no, absolutely. You can see how it gets played out. Yeah.
And then what's interesting about the app is that, you know, technology can save us all. And if we just had a dashboard or an app or whatever, we would know all this stuff and everyone would be saved. And yet you see it in that example. And then I always think, I mean, I blame Mark Zuckerberg for the misinformation.
Everything.
Yes. Well, for everything. But all the disinformation and misinformation that has been allowed to flourish on Facebook, and that has just kept this whole thing with steam and fuel around the vaccination, and just how egregious that behavior has been. So I always like to take a hit or like to see technology and that it's going to save us. There's still a human side to this too. Well, so Biden today, actually, I just saw this happened with the Veteran Affairs, is going to require civilian federal employees to have the vaccination.
Right.
And this seems like a major step forward. Although, as you have said, and many others have said, you require to have vaccinations to do a number of different things as employees or as going to school, what have you. So that seems to be sort of the test balloon for really making mandatory vaccines a thing.
I was thinking one of the main objections to not doing it is we don't really have the data. We don't have the test results. We don't really know how safe it is, right? And I was thinking, when they brought in the polio vaccine and they managed to vaccinate all of New York in 6 weeks, right? Did they have the data then?
Yeah.
Right? When they did the measles vaccine, did we have 20 years of data before we put it out into people? No. You are the data. You need to take that risk. And so far, it seems to be very, very high payoff, very low risk at a population level.
Yeah. And then you just think, well, if there were data, would you even be persuaded by that data? Because the science itself isn't. So I don't know. Then it just becomes a big cycle.
Yeah. It's a loop. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, Blake, what is going on with the economy? It's going too fast, too hot, too cold, inflation.
Anything you want. You can stick your finger in anywhere in the pudding and tell any story you want. So let's start with the following. A quarterly report from Alphabet, which is Google, Apple, and Microsoft. They made $57 billion in profits.
For over the last week? I mean, that's insane.
No, over the past, I think it was 3 months. Yeah, 3 months. It's totally insane, right? So, you know, the FANGs continue to dominate, you know, the stock market. The stock market has a tiny wobble. Everybody poops themselves. And no, actually, it's fine. It mean reverts. We're back there. It's all good. Let's see. Inflation, right? There was the spike in inflation. A lot of it is a base effect, as we explained before. And it's not really the 1970s again, and it's just not happening, etc. And you see this because bond yields, right, which are usually sort of a marker of future inflation, have gone down. So again, you've got that one. At the same time, you can pick any set of prices you want, particularly real estate, and say, but clearly it's such an important part of people's consumption basket, the actual inflation rate is higher. Right, but then you can strip out other things and make it lower. So the bottom line is, nobody knows. I think part of this is, I was thinking about this the other day, since about 2008, at least since 2008, what we've done is we keep hearing this phrase, or some version of this phrase, getting back to normal.
Oh yeah, yep.
Right?
Yep.
So 2008, basically, the extraordinary interventions by central banks, chucking money all over the place, etc., saving the financial system. Right, that'll end and somehow we'll get back to normal. And that was meant to be, for example, the Fed balloons its balance sheet to $3 trillion and it's going to sell it back. Well, it sold back some stuff, but it really can't shrink a balance sheet of that size. So they're not going back to normal, right? The Fed's been doing this thing called the reverse repo. Let me explain what that is.
I know.
So basically, every night they credit the accounts of big banks with tons of treasuries.
Okay.
And then they buy them back the next day for a few cents less. And they're using this to help put a floor on their interest rates. They went from doing zero to, I think it was something like $900 billion a day in these like swap arrangements, right? That's not normal,
yeah.
Right? That's totally not normal, yeah. Right? And there's all these things where we're like, we keep, you know, the pandemic, right? So after this, we'll get back to normal. It's already changed all our working practices, right? It's already changed our psychology of what we expect from jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And the big one, of course, that we never seem to adapt to is the whole of the West is on fire and running out of water. Germany has got floods in it that would make Noah go, hold on, I need a bigger ark,
yeah.
Right? Siberia is belching hundreds of millions of tons of methane, let alone carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere. And of course, we just discount this all the time and start saying, you know, we have extreme weather.
Yes.
No,
yes.
You're in the middle of a not going back to normal. Like, you couldn't have a bigger concatenations of not going back to normal than this. And yet, every time you switch on the TV and look at it, it's like, well, when we get back to normal? It's like, there's no normal. But we keep doing it.
Well, and just the heat wave in the Pacific Northwest, where their air conditioning isn't prevalent in homes. They're like, once in a lifetime, just to your point. And then you see, like, once in a lifetime is now twice, three. Now it's every year in a lifetime. And the heat wave is about to start, I think, again in the Pacific Northwest, though, of course, is not as
right.
hot. But you're still like, is there a big difference between 99 and 102? I'm not sure that they're...
Canada is not meant to be 40 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Siberia is a metaphor for bloody freezing. It's not meant to be 100 degrees Fahrenheit in your coast. And that's what it is. So we're already there and we're like, when do we get back to normal? It's like, you're already in a different space. You are in that tipping point and nobody wants to deal with it. So what happened, your bit of disappointment this week was at the start of the week, or was the end of last week, the G20 met to say, hey, you know, it really looks like things are going to shit in terms of climate. Maybe we could have more aggressive targets, mm-hmm. well, at least mm-hmm. aggressive targets. And they went, no, we can't agree on that. Poland held out over coal. The Germans, who talk such a good game on green, basically are underinvesting because, of course, they're terrified of spending money. And also, the guy who's going to take over from Merkel actually just authorized a coal mine. So it's just, you know, 75 levels of hypocrisy while talking a good game.
He's like
it's
one of the 12 beige guys, right? I mean, they're all kind of look the same players, whatever. Okay.
I thoroughly expect the aliens that have been watching us for a long time to just come down and just go, right, time out. You lot had your chance. We gave you a very nice
yes.
planet, and you cannot even agree that there's a problem. So you're done. You're out of here.
But I guess, you know, it's still, even though it doesn't, it still surprises you just as a spectator, as an observer, that the countries can't say, this, wow, we have to do something. We're already late to doing something. We're not going to solve anything, but we should at least like symbolically try to do something. And they can't even like agree to symbolically do anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you can set all the targets you want. You have to set about achieving them.
Yeah.
You can't do any of this, for example, without totally unproven technologies like carbon capture and storage. But as my friend Brendan Greeley put it the other day, he says, you think about it, the number one objection to a lot of these sort of carbon capture technologies is, you know, they're not economically effective. Well, so long as they're effective in the sense that it works, who cares how much it costs? You can print more money. You can't print more planet.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse for not doing this other than elections and votes and people caring about the short term and all the usual stuff and getting back to normal, because we all want to go back to normal.
Well, I think that's such an interesting point, the getting back to normal, because it's like, oh, the way it was during these golden glory days of a year and a half ago. It's not even like, you know, fill in the blank year. It's like, and it's just like, but a year and a half ago, it was basically the same, or fill, you know, 3 years ago or whatever. Whatever the period
right,
was.
Right, you know, go back beyond 2008. We had the Iraq War. Do you remember driving down the road and having color-coded emergencies?
Yeah, right, right.
All that nonsense, right? I mean, you know, what exactly is this normal that we're trying to get back to?
Right. Well, and like having to take off every piece of clothing as you go to the as you go through the scanner at the airport. I mean, that's...
Right, exactly, yeah. Which, you know, yeah. is still there, yes. et cetera. Yep. Anyway, let's change the tune. It's also very depressing. Let's celebrate the positive aspects of humanity. Oh, that yes. would be the Olympics. Over to you, Carrie.
Well, I was thinking of like talking about something that economically works. The Olympics, yes. Well, I have Olympic fever. I love the Olympics. I mean, this is a big part of my childhood when there are only three channels. And like, what did you watch except the Olympics in the summer? And so now that there's, you know, 58,000 channels, I get to watch, you know, every surfing, for example, and skateboarding as Olympics start or as Olympic sports. But of course, it's COVID. There's no one there. Corporate sponsors are sad because they can't, you know, reap all their dollars. NBC paid $11 zillion for it. And, you know,
and nobody cares.
I don't know if they'll make their money back. Yeah. Or not. Are you
I only ever watch one thing, which is soccer. So, of course, what I was watching was the European Championships. And, you know, we can get into that if you want. So it's a bit of ancient history now. But, you know, there's my whole sort of fractured relationship as a Scot, but also as a Brit. Basically just waiting for the English to go completely mental about how they're absolutely going to win this. They lasted until the semi-final and then that was it. It just went completely mad. And of course the Italians know how to close out a game and that was the end of that.
But this was the game with the players. This was the game with the three black players, right? And then, like, they got totally...
Yeah, they all missed their penalties and they shouldn't have been the ones taking the penalties. And instantly, a tsunami of racial yes. abuse hits Twitter and all this. Yeah, I mean, it's the usual... And then there's the whole thing about, you know, basically getting into the stadium and rushing the stewards and overwhelming the police. And it's like, yep, you are a bunch of morons. That's all there is to it at the end of it. Well, what can
it's
you do?
It's good to know this exists across in the UK as well.
Oh, everywhere, absolutely. But anyway, the Olympics, right? So anyway, I don't watch it.
Yes.
I don't. But it must be a nightmare when basically, you know, the TV draws, for example, Simone Biles basically says, I'm done. I don't want to do this shit just now.
Yes.
And she walks off. I mean, no, that means nobody watches that thing, right? I mean, that the corporate sponsors must be going mental.
Well, and I've thought a lot about this in terms of the athletic sporting side of things. And then also as a black woman who's 24 years old. And you just forget that the athletes themselves are like in their early 20s, late teens. Like there's the, oh gosh, I'm going to screw up her country. She's 46 years old. She was competing in gymnastics. She was from one of the stands. I'm sorry that I can't remember. And I mean, she was celebrating because she's 46 in the Olympics. But you just realize how young, in stark contrast, how young the Olympians are and just like the pressure that they feel. And so I thought a lot about this because you're exactly right. The people on both sides were like, how could she do this? And like, good for her. And, you know, there's the cynical, like her corporate sponsors obviously were supporting her or I don't know if she talked to them beforehand, but one might think that was some consideration. But really thinking about those black athletes and athletes of color and how it is that NBC pushes them as the face of the Olympics, because of course NBC sucks on all this stuff, right? They have Matt Lauer with like a button, you know, that keeps women in the office, and they have, you know, I think like 8% of NBC News is a person of color for a total of like 30%. They have no show with a person of color. I mean, all of this stuff. So they can push this one woman forward as the face of the Olympics. And she did. She talks about the weight of the world on her shoulders. And she's the savior of USA Gymnastics. That, of course, is part of a huge sexual abuse scandal.
I mean, no, totally. I totally get it. Absolutely. Do you remember Bodie Miller?
I do. Yeah, the skier.
Right. So Bodie Miller is an interesting counterpoint to this. For those people who don't remember, the only bit of the Olympics I ever watch is the Winter Olympics. I like to watch the skiing. So a good 10 years ago, maybe more now, there was this American wunderkind called Bodie Miller. And the way they set this up, I mean, it was unbelievable. It's like, he's going to win everything. He could win 10 medals. He can win whatever. And basically, he didn't sort of say, because nobody said this at this point in time, you know, look, this is too much for me. I can't deal with this pressure. I need to break him out. Basically, what he did, he just kind of like switched off and didn't give a shit. And he kind of lost everything. And when he lost these first two events, like everyone was like wagging the finger and he's not serious and how dare he and all the rest of it. And eventually him or one of his people close to him just came around, what is it to you? He's the one who's done the hard work, right? If he's mentally up for it, he should be up for it. And if he's not, then no. Who are all you people investing your lives in this person through this sport? This is ridiculous. Go away. So yeah, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah, I think though for Black women especially, because they are carrying so many different weights on their shoulders, that it's even more intense because she's saving USA Gymnastics. She's showing the world that Black women can do these amazing things. She's supposed to be the face of like racial reconciliation for the United States for the past 240 years. And so
does she know she's actually signed up for all these jobs? I mean, I know there's a big question.
Yes.
There, you know, I mean,
yeah,
we can project this onto her, right? But maybe it's as simple as, you know, she just, whatever her regime is, has been knocked out and she just doesn't feel that good. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of European athletes who are basically like, you know, some of the supplements that athletes can legally take are actually illegal in Japan. So some people have had their sort of the meds knocked out of order. I mean, who knows what's going on with people? But it's interesting the way to mean, you know, we, in a sense, we are doing it, right? We're basically saying, well, this person, look at all the pressure on this person.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I'm sure that that's there, but it's also amazing that we do that, right? If you just step back,
yes,
from it, we invest so much in these people and it's like, well, why? And, you know, precisely as you say, because it saves gymnastics, the NBC and the Republic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I do think, just in comparison, there should always be that normal human that tries to do, I mean, average human that tries to do like a cartwheel or swim one length of the pool in comparison, just so we can see how extremely, incredibly, like, talented these athletes are. Because I love the swimming part of things. So just to see like a normal person ski down a ski slope or swim, you know, two lengths of the pool, and to see,
right,
just how incredibly fast they are in comparison, maybe we wouldn't do that because we're like, oh, someone, of course Bodie Miller is supposed to win. And you're like, but he's also flinging himself down a hill at like 500 miles an hour.
Right. And we all have off days. I mean, you know,
yes,
simple as that.
Yeah. Here's my economic question for you in the Olympics. Do you think that any other country other than like the US or China or fill in the blank, I don't know, some other really rich company will ever host the Olympics? I mean, it's not like Jamaica's ever going to be able to. I mean, does it just become this whole, you know?
Here's an interesting thing, right? So, you know, the official word on this is you never make any money off of it, right? So, you know, Canada's,
yeah,
still paying back the 1976 Olympics and all the rest of it, right? But at the same time, I mean, London hosted the Olympics. What it did was give them an excuse to clear up all this toxic land that they ended up building the Olympic Village on. That's all been knocked down and is all housing now, right? So, you know, it depends on how you do it. So it's not clear to me over the very long run you necessarily make a colossal loss of this. You can do, but it's not written in the stars. I think the other side of this really interesting is the World Cup. So if you look at the way the World Cup's awarded and think about the way the Olympics are awarded, I'm not casting aspersions on any, but let's just say there is significant questioning about the award process that gave it to Russia, which was a great success, by the way, and now Qatar. Now, you can say that Russia has a footballing history, but you cannot say that Qatar has a footballing history. It is an environmental disaster, and thousands of people, migrant workers, have died building these stadia, which will be used for 6 weeks, and then, literally at one point, they were planning to put them on barges and ship them out into the world, because, of course, what people really need is another stadia they're not going to use. So, you know, somehow they think it's worth it. Right. They're obviously spending an absolute ton of money to do this, even if it sits in Malador. They think it's worth it. So maybe there will be other countries that think it's worth it.
Thinking about other hotspots around the world, and I chuckle only because, you know, it's the continuation of the theme of wildfires, you know, civil wars. I mean, it was bizarre. The assassination of the Haitian president was so strange in that the Colombians and Haitians, I guess, were the assassins, and they got into his bedroom and shot him and then just like kind of walked out of the house. it was just such a strange series of events. I never really caught what the motivation was to assassinate him. And of course, tons of conspiracy theories around who's actually behind it and was, you know, U.S. led or, you know, some other.
Well, whenever anything happens in the world, basically there's a reasonable number of people that will say, well, it was obviously the CIA.
Yeah.
And it might have been in some instances, but there's a weird thing. The Brits used to, British intelligence used to call CIA caught in the act. Right, because honestly, it's a lot of times they weren't very good. Yet at the same time, I mean, you know, there are people who think that every single thing that happens in the world is a CIA plot.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I've always found it fascinating. It's a bit like, you know, the sort of the view of the world you get with a lot of left wing Brits and French about the United States. 330 million couch potatoes sitting on the couch, unable to move, all clinically obese, all addicted to Fox, whatever. And at the same time, the most Machiavellian foreign policy apparatus the world has ever seen. And it's like, well, where are they getting them from? Because they can't be off the couch, right?
Right.
I mean, how can you have both of these things at the one time? But
I love that image, right? Well, binging the Olympics when we can't even like walk a half a step and also being the masterminds of the world.
And it's not even as if, you know, we're alone in being sort of a ginormously large country now. As usual, America has led the way and everybody else is doing it too.
Yes.
So basically, Haiti's kicking off and you don't know why. What do you think about South Africa?
I mean, South Africa is, I mean, that is just feels like desperation. I mean, huge, you know, protest fires are setting stores and the like on fire. I think at one point, one of their neighbors, Eswatini, had declared martial law. I think South Africa also connected to COVID, like the Tunisian, the president sacking the prime minister in Tunisia over COVID. But I mean, South Africa seems to... It's happening in Durban.
Yeah, this is Jacob Zuma. This is basically the judiciary going after Zuma, and basically Zuma supporters don't believe the judiciary. There's a warning here for the United States, right? I mean, essentially, this is what happens when you have a president that's removed from office and the supporters don't accept it. And then when you find a legal ruling against the president, they all go completely mental, right? So there's a nice warning here for the United States and the games that you can play. But what's shocking about it, as many commentators have said, is, you know, the level of violence in this has like really surprised everyone, and also sort of, you know, the level of looting that has gone on as well, from small businesses, you know, local businesses, etc., just everybody just clearing it out. And this is what happens when you have a completely polarized, highly unequal country. I wonder who that sounds like.
Yeah, people are just pissed, you know. Everything is just like,
I did write a book about that, you know.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, exactly. What was it called again? Anyway,
actually, on this point, Blythe, this is a little bit of fun stuff, but I mean, Jeff Bezos and his spaceship to the wherever he was going.
You want to say it. Go on, say it.
He rode what looked to be a part of the male anatomy into the sky. I mean, you couldn't even make that up. And you're just like, did you notice the design of this, Jeff Bezos, as you were in your cowboy hat? And also,
he wanted big windows on the top.
I mean, I guess. And just like the point that you're making about the economic divide, I mean, could there be any more?
Is the carbon footprint going to be of every space tourist who spends $250,000 to do this for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just ridiculous. I posted one on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if I mentioned this already the last time we spoke, but this one just blew me away. So there's a private equity firm. The private equity firm buys a power station, right? Like a shitty old coal-fired power station that nobody wants because it's obviously a stranded asset and you can't get loans to redo it or whatever. They're like, we're going to buy it in the cheap. They then buy a coal mine to power the power station, right? Why are they doing this? Because everything's linked up to Bitcoin machines. The net value of that for humanity is negative billions, right?
Yes.
But you'll make billions out of it, right? I mean, talk about the incentives just being completely wrong.
But then, Blythe, he says, you as an Amazon customer or whatever paid for this trip. And you're like, yeah, we did. Like, it's just even the like, I don't know what that is. Is that total just arrogance? I don't know what that is.
You have to hand it to Bezos. I mean, I think Bezos is one of those people that must have been teased about his name growing up. Like, you know, Bezos, whatever. I don't know why, but it seems like something to be teased about. And he's developed a kind of like, I really don't give a shit what anyone thinks attitude. So he just decided at some point he's going to go into space and you people keep using my stuff and I'm worth $200 billion. So and yeah. that's it. And that's yeah. all I've got to say about it.
Yeah.
And he's impervious to shame.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And he put on his cowboy hat and that was that. Okay.
But, you know, Branson did the same thing as well the week before. And it's just like, you know, think about it. Here are these entrepreneurs, these leaders, these captains of industry. And basically, rather than doing anything to actually solve the massive problems we have, let's just spend $250,000 each and go to space for 10 minutes and then drink some champagne. I mean, it's just like, really? This is the best we can come up with? Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, since we're on this topic, I don't know. We were talking about books. Will you be buying Prince Harry's memoir, which he is, quote, I'm writing this not as the prince I was born, but as the man I have become.
Well, that first of all, that just sounds like a line from Game of Thrones.
I know.
You got to do it in a Game of Thrones accent, right? I'm writing this not as the prince I was born, but as the man I've become.
I mean, at some point, I mean, I take him seriously, but then at some point, it just kind of becomes a joke unto himself, too. I mean, he takes himself very seriously.
Oh, no, it was quite, look, obviously, he was like, I want out of the farm. I want out of the nut house. I'm not going to do this anymore. I married this woman. She has the not unreasonable point of view that having to surrender my passport and have someone drive me everywhere for the rest of my life is more than a little screwed up. So maybe we should get out of this. Now, what are the assets that he's bringing to it? What are the assets she's bringing to it? You have the immediate notoriety. She could immediately go back, I suppose, to acting, etc. They've cut their deal with Netflix or whatever. But what does he have? He has one thing. He has that story as an asset.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's, I think I mentioned this before, I'm surprised he's doing it this early. I thought he'd wait a little bit. Maybe they're running out of cash because apparently they spend a lot on security and he needs the cash and he'll get like $50 or $100 million dollar advancement, right? Yeah. But it depends on, you know, what he actually says in it. I mean, if he sort of like blows the lid on the horrors of the firm, fair enough. But, you know, if it's just an anodyne sort of like, yes, they were really cruel to my mom. It's like, well, yeah, we know, you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, I never read these books. I just like to read the commentary on these books when they come out. So you can tell me all about it.
Yeah, I like to watch the movie based on the book. You know, it really cuts to the chase.
So to close it all out, we were talking about getting back to normal. And one of the things that make me actually feel that we are getting back to normal is, of course, the rebirth of Bennifer. Right. I mean, that's it. When Ben Affleck is back with Jennifer Lopez, then we're back to normal, right? This is mean reversion.
That's great. Right. So they're like taking us back to the early 2000s, right? The world can be on fire, but we still have, like, they're back together. So we can go back.
I mean, you know, we got loads of time to deal with things. Sure, we'll get around to it. I mean, it's not as if we're going to get to 2021 and the world's on fire. We haven't done anything.
Right.
That would be ridiculous. Right. So we can all just go back 20 years and pretend everything's fine.
Yeah. Well, it was great to see you. I think we'll be back for end of the summer wrap up, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we may be in the tipping point, but we've got a few iterations before the planet actually destroys our ability to record podcasts.
Well, and before the aliens come down and take over the microphones, too.
Yeah, let me just say for the record, I don't actually really believe there are those aliens, but if they were there, then they'd have every right to be pissed off.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. We will talk to you all soon.
Bye.